Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Coffee with the Commissioner. This is the 12th podcast. It will be the last one before the elections in May. So, Joe and Carlos, welcome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? We'll go with you first, Carlos. I always ask Joe first.
Yes, I'm glad to be here. So a little bit about us. So my name's Carlos. This is my good friend, my mentor, my concierge, my biggest pain in the backside also. But above all, you know, he's just a good man in my life. So I'm an everyday guy. I work, I play hard, I play football, I look after my children, and we have a mission. And the mission is to inject as much love, kindness and compassion into the services and try and change the way we work with vulnerable people.
What's your football team? Because you're not an adopted Teesider yet, so where's home?
No, so I don't support Middlesbrough, I don't support Newcastle, sorry for that, but I do support Liverpool, the greatest club team in the world. So
and obviously you grew up in Anfield then, is that? No.
I grew up in Derby.
You grew up in Derby, all right. Cool.
So, I think glory fan is so what you're looking for.
I can see the link. Yeah. Right. And what about yourself, Joe? Where's home?
So actually, home for me right now is Derby. However, I was born in Manchester and I lived as a child across Manchester and Naples. So my football team, as you know, is Manchester City.
Yeah.
Glory supporters.
My first game was against Luton Town, you know. That was my first ever match I went, and City got relegated at that game at Main Road. So that was a while ago. So I'm a Man City fan. My family still live in Manchester and Naples, so and Naples. I travel across the two.
Wow. Yeah. So you've both got interesting backgrounds. So if we come back to you, Carlos, so what was life like growing up for you?
So school years was, I enjoyed school, really enjoyed school. I was effectively a geek. I loved learning, my favourite lesson was maths, after school clubs, played basketball. Love school. I grew up with three siblings, two younger brothers. Actually, I have an older sister and an older brother, but they didn't live with us. And the problem with my childhood was it was inconsistent. So a lot of love, a lot of care, a lot of attention at times. And then there was a secret in my family that my mum and dad were struggling with addiction, crack and heroin. So effectively, when they were struggling with their addiction, life wasn't great.
And were you aware of that as a child?
No. So as a child, when I think back now, as a child, I wasn't aware, but I knew something was different with my mum in particular at times, and that was just confusing. So I wasn't aware. But as an adult, I now understand. But as a child, I wasn't aware, and it caused confusion in my household. But my mum's a great woman, a strong woman, and she's in recovery now. And has been for the last 9 years, so we have a splendid relationship now.
Your background's a little bit different, though, Joe. Obviously, part Italian.
Well, I like to consider myself as a full Italian. Yeah. I don't think there is anything other than a full Italian. Yeah, so I'm very fortunate. I've got dual nationality.
Yeah.
So, but I grew up in a very Italian household. Again, very different, very strong, consistent family there. That didn't mean that it was always easy. So travelling to and from changing countries was actually really exciting, but also created a little bit of instability. My backstory is actually, I'm severely dyslexic and I wasn't diagnosed until my 30s. So I guess I went through childhood not really understanding why I couldn't read and write. And I was excluded from school, got into trouble, my behaviour was not always great because I would generally kick off in school before I got asked to read out aloud. However, because of the consistency at home, I had these protective factors, and I guess that supported and enabled me to make good decisions, choices. So when I left school, I actually trained as a carpenter. That's my qualification. So if you've got any kitchens or furniture you need doing. Yeah. So and the dyslexic brain's fascinating because what it enables you to do is to see things and create things. So that's my childhood.
I think I think dyslexia, Asperger's, anything on the spectrum, he's awesome. And I've got personal experience of it myself with my son. And I just think they're just wired differently.
Superpowers, aren't they? That's how I think.
I know, I've seen my son do things and just logically, and you just think, oh, that's so obvious. Why isn't everybody doing it that way? Now, I've met you guys a few times now, and you're always together, so almost joined at the hip. Proper bromance going on. So how did you meet Carlos then? What date were you on, Joe?
I'd set up my own business, and my business was Joseph the Carpenter, and I was doing some work in Derby. And one night I encountered a group of young people who were committing what would be classed as antisocial behaviour that were involved in crime. So I challenged these kids. And when I realised that, actually, they had nobody in their lives to help and support. So I made the brave decision and I started a youth club. That was it. I didn't know what I was doing. And I guess it was a time where it was easier to kick stuff off like that. And I just started a youth club. That was it. I bumped into Carlos on Marlborough Road in Allenton in Derby. And there was Carlos and a good friend of his. And I remember giving him leaflets to come along to the youth club. So that's how we met. Carlos was 12 years old, as I've already said. So that's how we met. And so we began this little bit of a journey. Carlos used to come to a youth club and we built up a little bit of a rapport about that. So that's how we met.
And how do you remember this random bloke in the street in Derby then, Carlos?
So I don't remember that encounter. Yeah. The first time I remember seeing Joe was at the youth club, and there was loads of kids at the youth club, but he was a gentleman that was extremely welcoming, chatty, but had a real caring aura. That's how I received him when I first met him.
At what point did you start working together?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic, how it happened. So we lost contact probably 16, 17. I think I was on my own personal journey. I've been kicked out of my home. Mum kind of just at the end of the tether. I was struggling with a lot of emotional damage and a lot of trauma.
And that was quite a dark time for you, wasn't it?
It was a dark time because I didn't know who I was. I no longer had the support structure of like a family, and I was kind of out there on my own, and I didn't really want any support anyway. I just wanted to be on my own. I just wanted to do this on my own, and I thought I knew best.
Yeah.
That will be familiar for many 16, 17, 18 year olds. Yeah. They think they know best. And I genuinely believed at the time I knew best. So I had a crack at it. It's fair to say I failed dramatically at it. But the journey was really interesting. And Joe reached out a number of times, and I got involved in serious criminality and ended up with a long prison sentence. So let's jump forward a little bit. A lot of the agencies, probation, police, social care, housing. As soon as I got my prison sentence, I heard nothing from any of them. But a gentleman did contact me, and his name was Joe. He reached out and goes and basically said, "Look, you know, I want to come and see you, come and support you. Is that okay?" So I said, "Fine, no problem. Come along." I had an ulterior motive. And my ulterior motive was, this is a man that can get into visits as a legal visitor. So maybe I can abuse that position and I can get some drugs in. So that's what I tried to do, and it failed dramatically. And he was quite offended when I proposed that to him. And I went away with kind of no care in the world about it. And then I joined therapy. I went into therapy and I started to think about the people that had stood by me throughout my life. And it became really apparent that actually what I did to this gentleman was quite unfair, and I felt really bad about it. So I reached out to him and apologised. He came back and said, "Look, no hard feelings, I'll come and see you again." So he came and see me again, and I didn't try to corrupt him this time, and we developed our relationship. So I ended up volunteering. We did some voluntary work with him, with his new organisation, and kind of fell into paid work. Literally, that was never the plan. He offered me the job and said, "Do you want to come and work?" And that's how I got into it.
And that's brilliant. So some of the most influential people I've met in youth work never had any intention whatsoever in getting into youth work. So if we fast forward from that now then, so tell us what Get Connected is then, Joe.
So Get Connected effectively exists to work with those professionals, those agencies whose job it is to work with the most vulnerable. And that's what we do. We get them sitting around the table. We get them talking. Carlos's great skill and ability is that he's been through all of those services as a service user. And therefore, he has the highest level of degree of what it is to go through those services, whether that's social care, probation, youth offending team, being a prison cell. And therefore, we bring that side of our knowledge. And then we bring my side, which is almost like the service delivery, and those two worlds collide to hopefully motivate, inspire.
And you're working in Hemlington currently, which is hence why you're up in Teesside. What do you see in Hemlington that you think you can make a difference on?
So really interesting. We've been in Hemlington now for over a year, been doing some work there. There are some amazing human beings there, but there are also some real big challenges. So it's interesting that comment, us making a difference. We never see ourselves as making a difference. We see ourselves as actually empowering others who do genuinely make that difference. We were in a meeting this morning and just chatting, and yesterday we had a couple of meetings about actually such pride in those communities, some great human beings in those communities. How do we make sure that these folks living there feel like this is home? So that's a real critical element.
And I see that quite a lot. If I come back to yourself, Carlos, when you're working with some of these young people and you see somebody that's got some potential in there, because I think all young people have potential, but they're living in a pretty tired, rundown house, school's not really the place for them, it's not where their strength's at, they've got no positive role models, be that male, female, whatever. How do you reach out to those people? How are you gonna switch them on? How are you gonna get?
It's a good question. I don't think there's one answer that I can give that will, you know, qualify as, oh, that's the solution. I think it's a long process. It takes a while. Some may switch on, as you put it, quicker than others. But I think the point is about being present, being visible, and making the effort to reach out. So there's this phrase about, you know, people have to come and find us, you know where we are. I think that's the wrong approach. You have to go and find them and be visible. And I think a lot of the people that so for me, it was about a feeling that I had, not about what people were doing to me. Feeling that I had that I wasn't, this is the path that I need to be on, this is my path, and there's not really any other options. So it's a very narrow view. And my aim, our aim, Project Connect's aim, is to show that there is a path, a better path. And we do that through love, kindness and compassion.
And Teesside, Hemlington and Teesside generally, he's not the first. Get Connected's not new for you, is it? It's something you've done in other places. How successful has that been, really? When you look at what you've done over the years, what would you point to as some of your biggest successes?
Well, that's a big question. What are the biggest successes? I think, again, so we live in a world of impacts, measures and matrixes. And sometimes those measures, matrixes, and impacts are lots of small little things, lots of individual things. We were just chatting about what are some of the impacts. It's really interesting. The very first Get Connected we ran, which was actually in Surrey, believe it or not, a place called Reigate and Banstead. There's a new manager came and said, well, we still want to build upon the legacy of Get Connected. So that was in 2017 we did that. So for me, there was an element of this is carrying on. And again,
so you've undersold it. What actually happened is we had the meeting.
We had I love the meet, that. Yeah. We had you've the undersold meet, it. Get out of the
he
way.
He has undersold it because we had the meeting probably a month ago, 3 weeks ago. And the lady, she started the meeting by saying, I'm the new manager, director, whatever it was, of the council. And then she explained that when she came in, everybody was talking, these are her words, people were talking about get connected. And she thought that was a in-house project that they had created. But then it became apparent that it was actually an outside project that had come in to do some work. That was in 2017. So in 2024, that legacy of Get Connected and some of the language that Get Connected has had brought to that area was still living on 7 years later.
Yeah.
So that's about legacy. That's about a change of culture. And she wanted us to come back and bring that to life and kind of revamp it for where they are at the moment, which I think that's a testimony to the work that happened. We did some training with a bunch of police officers. So on one side, you had the drugs enforcement team effectively kicking in doors, arresting people, getting people off the street temporarily. But we know that within hours, you know, the next gang is in there. So the problem is not removed. It's just arrested literally for a while. And then you have the child exploitation team in the same room. And they both have very different views and different approaches to working with drug issues in the communities. But there was one particular officer who was saying he doesn't understand why the child exploitation team are there, doesn't see their value, and actually just lock them up and get rid of them. And that was on day one. And I was like, wow. So it is true, you know, these drug enforcement officers, they actually do, they don't mess about, do you know what I mean? And I've known that over the years, but it's not, that doesn't solve the problem. And the child exploitation team are saying some of those kids, those underage kids, are being forced to sell drugs, being bullied, being intimidated. And that's also true. So there's a place in the middle that we need to meet. But this particular officer was having none of it. He was advocating it's not that. So jump forward after the Get Connected, or it was actually during the Get Connected. We had a personal testimony from a social worker who had a phone call from a police officer to say, you know, I've been on a undercover mission, if you like, and we found X amount of young people and I want to refer them in as kids being exploited. What surprised me, and I think all of us, was that officer was the same officer that was in the room probably 6-7 months ago, talking about, you know, he doesn't understand the value of child exploitation.
And for me, there is a place for robust policing, right, without a shadow of a doubt. But if I have a personal view that if somebody's peddling poison on our streets, they should be taken off our streets. No question about it. Just take them off our streets at that point. But you've then got to understand what happens from that point, because if you just bang them up for 12 months, send them back out, they're going to keep doing that. You've got to give them a reason to not do that and to do something different. So you've done Get Connected in other parts of Teesside so far as well, haven't you? What?
Yeah, so we've worked in Newport and Hemlington are the two areas that we've done Get Connected. And absolutely, you know, as we said, there's right at the beginning of this conversation, there's never one thing that actually makes the difference. It's multiple factors. There has got to be enforcement, without a shadow of doubt, to be able to do that. But going back to what I also said, is we've got to be smart on this. How do we do the best thing? That 14, 15-year-old child who's being sucked into this world will become that 22, 23-year-old hardened drug dealer in the future. So how do we, as you just said, what do we do to create opportunities? I would say that lots of people said to me about Carlos when he went to jail. He's too far gone. He's never going to turn around. I can tell you that this guy is an inspiration, not only to me, to lots of people. He's to kids. Kids love him to bits. Do you know what I mean? He's a real inspiration. You know, chatting to children who are going through similar circumstances. He is an inspiration. His story and who he is.
I agree with you. And Carl, you are an inspiration. You are a legend, mate. I think that's a brilliant example, right? There is a brilliant example. Do you not think there's a danger sometimes? And I've had this conversation with other people where you see somebody who has been a long way down the road and they've turned themselves around. And I've had guests on this podcast who have been in exactly that position. Yeah. Do you think there's a danger there of kids thinking, well, I can do this for a while and I can always turn it around at the other side? How do we caveat that? How do we say to kids that, for every Carlos who did turn his life around, there are 10 that didn't, right? So how do we get that? Because the danger is, if you're always telling kids that you can turn your life around, they don't understand that for everyone that comes out the other side, there's one that's dead. There's five that are in long year judgment sentence. There's four that are addicted to drugs and have lost family and friends and everything they owned. Right. So how do we get that message across? That Carlos, he's not unique, but he's a bit of a unicorn. He's fairly rare.
I'm certainly not unique, and there's many people that have transitioned and made the same journey. To answer your question directly, I think it'd be fair for me to say that a lot of the young people that are coming through the doors of prison, social care, they have siblings, fathers, friends that have passed away. They're in prison. Yeah. So the list that you listed, they know it. They already know that this is where they're at, but they don't see another possibility. So I am that other possibility.
Yeah.
And not just me. Joe is that other possibility. But we need to go out and find them. And, services are so overworked and far stretched that they're just not having the reach that they were set up to have.
I've sat in many a prison with individuals. They didn't think, oh, that it's going to be my career choice to become, a drug dealer or a violent criminal. It's almost like that is the route that opened up for them. So how do we make sure that there are multiple routes? And how do we make sure that those kids who are misunderstood and don't have the opportunities get those opportunities? But equally, this is the tough one. How do we then make sure that when those kids are going off doing what they want to do, being able to keep the door ajar, open for when they want to return back? That becomes a real critical one.
Just to answer your question, it came to me now, the real answer. Because I was pondering, it's a really good question that you have. How we have to be careful about sending a message that inevitably you can turn your life around once you have the choice. And you may as well have a crack at it anyway. And if it doesn't work out, then you can turn your life around. I don't think it's that simple, but I understand the concern. Yeah. And the antidote to that is the end goal, which is one of three things. Multi-millionaire with no police on your back, a long prison sentence, potentially never getting out, or death. I cannot tell you the amount of hardened criminals that I've met. I've not met one that is a multimillionaire and has lived the life of Riley. I've met loads that are in prison and never getting out. And the end goal, and obviously I know people that have passed away, unfortunately, the end goal is certainly not worth it. So that's the end goal. And I'm here to say that I never reached that end goal, but I was really close. But it's worth having a go at another avenue. And that's the message.
And for me, part of the reason I love working with you guys is the genuineness that comes across from both of you. Because you do meet some people that want to get involved in youth work or have an idea about trauma-informed practice. Yeah. For all I understand it and I see the benefits, huge benefits in it. But sometimes you see people that are trained to want to do that. You guys aren't trained to want to do that. You do that from a passion. You do that from a place of love. You do that from the fact that it means something to you to see that happen. And that's what I really love about that.
If I can add to it, why it means something to us, and this is something that probably do for one of the first times, is that our journey, mine and Joe's journey, well, certainly my journey, is what I live is this journey that I'm trying to advocate for. I don't do it because, it's my mate that's doing it or it's something that I've read in a book that happens. This is the journey that I've been through, me personally. And this gentleman, not a professional, has stood by me every single step of the way. Police officers come and gone, kicked my doors in, arrested me, wrapped me up. I've tried to fight. I've lost virtually every battle. To be fair, I have got away from some officers, though. They're not as quick as they think. But in the end, I ended up in a prison cell with a long prison sentence. So they could say they won. Probation officers come and go. Social workers, they come and go. I've met some great professionals. I've also met some ones that are not, they're not doing a good job. They're not doing a good job. This gentleman, off his own back, has come and stood by me. Even when I failed, I slipped up, I made mistakes. I went backwards, two steps forward, three steps back. this gentleman says, look, I'm upset with what you've done, but I'm still going to stand by you and support you. Commit a crime, go to the courts, potentially go to jail. But the aftercare, when they come out of prison, because a lot of them, most of them will come out of prison, the aftercare has to be consistent. And it doesn't, it's not consistent. And we're trying to advocate for it being consistent, even when they fall up, when they slip up.
Okay, great. Brilliant, guys. I've got one last question for each of you. So it's a slightly different question for each of you. So I'll come to you first, Joe. If there was one thing you could say to other people that work in youth work or are working with young people, if there was one piece of advice you could give to somebody starting out in that youth work journey, what would it be?
Wow. Authenticity. Remain authentic. Do what you do because it's within you and it's who you are. So my journey, I didn't set out to be a youth worker. It's about being authentic. And what's powerful about that is authenticity is contagious. And those that are around you will see that you are authentic, that you are true and that you're real.
For you, Carlos, different question altogether. Lots of people talk about wanting to give people second chances or third chances. And I rarely meet anybody that doesn't think rehabilitation isn't a good thing. Those same people are massively hypocritical when it comes to actually meeting or employing or actually giving that second chance to somebody. What would you say to those people?
So what I'd say to those people is, again, it's about authenticity. It's about practice what you preach. So yeah, practice what you preach. It's easy for me to say that, sat here, but practice what you preach is a lot better than saying the right things and then not doing it. They will receive a lot more if they practice what they preached, if that makes sense.
It was. And no swearing in it.
No swearing.
Thank you. Right, guys, that's been brilliant. Fantastic guests, as I knew you would be. This has been Coffee with the Commissioner, filmed here at Flock in Middlesbrough. Thank you all very much, and I'll see you at the next episode.